Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Emergency 9 and Golf Podcast. We are back for another episode. Masters recap. McLean Boyd is here. Jay Woodson is here. I am Mike Maroney coming to you live / recorded from a hotel in Dublin, Ohio. Gents, what's up?
Another week, man. Just another week. No big deal last week. Nothing was going on. I wasn't watching any golf. So just really excited about the RBC Heritage this week.
Hey, I got to give some credit to the Heritage. Let's not bash the Heritage. It's early. But yes, it was the greatest week of golf last week, without question. But let's give the Heritage their due. What a great venue that is. You get so many good players that have such a difference in how far they hit the ball, be competitive. There's trees. It's a great video. We'll get into that. Let's not go too quick here. Mike, was there something you wanted to continue with?
No, I'm getting ready to sign off, actually.
it's like a fucking broken record. Just a little foreshadowing for the public there.
I hope my Wi-Fi is good tonight to the listeners. If there's any issues, I apologize. I'm using a hotspot on my phone since I can't get connected to the hotel Wi-Fi. So I feel like McLean tonight or Jay, they always have Wi-Fi issues. Now I'm the one with the Wi-Fi issue. So the three of us just can't sync this up. We've done this 157 times now, and I feel like one of us has had some sort of technical difficulty every time, at least logging in. We might start, and by the time we start, it's okay. But
we got to get you some more hotel points so you don't have to stay in a Home 2 Suites.
Well, you know.
I mean, I can promise you, Tom Jenkins doesn't know what a Home 2 Suites is.
No, I don't travel, for one. Two, I'm not rich, for a second. You know, and so, at a little event, had a nice little cocktail party dinner at Muirfield Village, and we'll be there tomorrow to play a little golf. It's only going to be 20 to 30 mile an hour winds with rain and potential thunderstorms. So,
oh, no,
I'm thinking I'm going to shoot like nothing tomorrow. It'll be great. Ooh. The golf course is already hard as shit when it's 70 and sunny. So I can't imagine what it's going to be like 20 to 30 in rain and thunderstorms. It'll be great. I'm sure the score will be wonderful.
I love it.
It's going to be a blast. Could have signed up for Citrus Farms.
I know. I should have signed up for a different event, but it's good to be back. I worked here in 2006. Haven't been back since. So a little reunion of sorts and just a special place, Jack's Place. So it was fun walking around the clubhouse. Some of it's been redone since I've been here, and you know, all of Jack's memorabilia and trophies and cool spot. So golf course looks primo. I was walking around the putting green and kind of around the clubhouse. It just looks money. Grandstands are growing up for next month's Memorial tournament. They keep the big scoreboard up year round, but even some of the little scoreboards were already up and grandstands were going up. So be fun to be out there tomorrow, regardless of the shitty ass weather that we're gonna get. So, but let's get to some real golfers. Not me shooting a million and a half tomorrow, but we're coming off Masters week, like we've talked about, greatest week of the year. And once again, Scottie Scheffler is your winner. Second Masters victory. Third win in his last four starts. Currently in 2024, Scottie Scheffler has 3 wins in 0 rounds of golf over par. Gents, what'd you make of it?
Well, I need to hear a little bit more enthusiasm from you out of this. I mean, my goodness. Scottie is the real deal. Like, he is legitimately the number 1, 2, and 3 best player in the world right now. Like, there, he is separating himself from everyone else in the game of golf. You don't want to say the guy can do no wrong, but my God, is he close. I mean, just doesn't seem to falter. Looks at the next shot as exactly what it is. Doesn't seem like the shot before really bothers him. His iron game, the way he drives the ball, I mean, my God, he is He is just on an absolute tear right this second. And the fact that in his last four starts, he missed winning four in a row by a 5-foot putt to get in a playoff. I mean, it wasn't like the guy finished T15 or missed the cut. He legitimately was a 5-footer away from potentially being four in a row.
Yeah, he's lost to one person in his last four events.
He's lost to one person, and that was by a shot. The guy is on absolute fire. He's made $12 million, over $12 million in 36 days playing the game of golf. I can't find a bad thing to say about the guy. I can't find it. I'm dumbfounded by what we're seeing. It's the closest thing we've seen to, and I hate making the analogy of bringing Tiger into the equation, but we've never seen anything else close. I think this is the closest that we've seen. I think everyone would agree with that. I don't know what you would say that would stop him. I mean, the only thing that's going to stop him this week is if Meredith goes into labor, which seems very likely. But
yeah,
outside of that, I mean, how is the guy not the favorite? Like, in everything he does. I mean, it's unreal.
I mean, I think we're pretty much almost at that point now where it's Scotty versus the field. Conversations when Tiger, and I don't think we've had guys get on hot streaks, right? Rory's been on some hot streaks. Rahm's been on some hot streaks. DJ, Koepka. There's been guys, you know, going back to 2015, Spieth. There's been guys that since, you know, Tiger's prime that have gotten on, you know, a 6-month, 8-month, 16-month hot streak. But he's actually been on a hot streak now since, you know, early 2022. And I don't see it ending. What I think of, like, when I was watching that on Sunday, and Jay, I was sitting next to Jay for most of it. We had a little party at the house, and it was, like, just not surprising. Like,
uneventful.
It is unbelievably it's uneventful. It's just, he hits the center of every fairway. He hits it to the perfect spot of every green. And at this point now, it's like, normally you'd be like, oh my God, this guy's good. Like, it's just like, yeah, that's what I expected. That's how good he is. It's now, he is so good. He is clinical, is the word I've been using to describe him. It is clinical to watch him play golf.
Well, and I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, one of the things that I noticed, one of the shots that I think stuck out to me was when he hit it out to the right of the green on 11. He knows he has a lead. It's easy to kind of protect that just a little bit. But at the same time, he's so confident in the fact that he's going to get up and down that he doesn't mind hitting it out there. I'm sure he didn't mean to sure shit aiming out to the right. And he hit it out there. He got up and down, made his par, and kept it moving. I mean, it is truly impressive.
That's a great point you made with 11, because that was one of the points I wanted to bring up tonight was when I was watching him. Now, granted, the three guys chasing him were at the time, and now they've even gone up higher, but there two were in the top 10 in the world. All three of them were in the top 20 in the world. Colin Morikawa, who was the lowest ranked of the three, already has two major championships. Ludwig's the hottest young star in the game. Max Homa has been the third or fourth or fifth best golfer in the world the last 2 years with the tear he's been on. Now, granted, he doesn't have a great major record, but these were, you know, certifiable stars and studs. And it kind of looked like it was a man against boys. Like, as far as the quality of the shots that were being hit and the decision-making, and like Morikawa, you cannot hit that ball in the left bunker on 9. You cannot hit it in the water on 11. Ludwig, who played an awesome round of golf, made one bad swing, one bad mistake on 11. You cannot hit that ball in the water on 11. It has to go. Hit it 20 yards left of that green. Like, don't even aim at that green. Just right where that flag green is, you get plenty of green to work with. Like, you just hit it way the hell right of the green. Like, you cannot do that.
And I don't want to stop the Scotty talk, but I will say with Morikawa, you know, watching that, you know, he had just made that double. And I feel like he just got greedy in that instance. He was like, I need to flag this on 11. This would be a big birdie right here to make. And he went flag hunting, and he tugged it just a hair. And that was the end of his golf tournament. I mean, that's how fickle winning a major championship really is. And as good as that guy is with his irons, that hole is so good. I said it last week. We were leaning into it. The 11 is one of the absolute best par fours in existence, I think. It is hard. It rewards good play. We saw, I mean, Bryson hit a hell of a shot in there and made birdie. I think he made birdie, but regardless, he had a hell of a shot in there. But on the backside of that, if you miss it slightly, you will be exposed. You tug that ball in the water, you're going to have a hard up and down at the same time. Like, it's not something to where if you tug it in the water, it's an up and down that's just easy. No, now you have to hit it over the water to try and get to that tuck pin. And now you're really stuck. You're looking at six without question with a good shot. So, you know what, again, going back to what Scotty did, he surgically took down that golf course. He hit the smart shot on 12, which is what Tiger's done for forever. Hit it over the bunker on the green. Just hit it middle of the bunker on the green, putt over to the right side. Don't give yourself a chance to hit it short right and run down the hill into the water, which we saw all the guys in 2019 do when Tiger won. That basically took everyone out of the golf tournament. Tiger hits it just over the bunker in the middle. Scotty took that exact play on, and it worked out really well for him. I just don't see any give in his game. The thing, what I will say, and what I think is why he's going to be successful right now and keep this run going, he's not trying to get better. I think he understands that what he has is good enough. I think maybe he's practicing on the greens a little bit, but he does seem to, he's got a new putter in the bag, and it seemed to be very successful for him since he's made the switch.
He's trying to groove what he's doing, like continue to groove it. I know where you're going with this. It's like he's not constantly trying to improve every aspect of his game. He's just like, okay, let me just groove what I'm doing and get more in sync with my putting, my wedge play. He's still working on the things that he needs to work on with Randy, but they're not making any big changes. Like, okay, we just have to get a little bit better in all these areas. Just keep continue to groove what we're currently doing. I love that he, like, you talked to him in these interviews. I mean, obviously he's been interviewed a ton over the past, you know, day, couple days, obviously, because he's been in the news, but like last year, but recently, obviously today and yesterday, you know, some of the things he kept talking about was like, I'm just trying to stay in the present. And I'm just trying, I mean, these are all the cliche words that you hear, but like, if you're really good at it and you know, you're talented, like this is what you end up seeing. Like, it just being able to just keep focusing on the shot that's in front of you and do it the best you can. He kept talking about taking a breath. He's like, I just kept trying to calm my body down, take a breath, really make sure I had a clear picture of what I was trying to do. Like, all the things that you hear people say, every psychologist says, like, he's just doing it. You know, it's not like he's not giving you anything that's over the top. Like, oh, I've got this thing that I do that's really different from everybody else, and that sets me apart. I just do what everyone talks about. I just do it really well. And that's really what it comes down to.
He's keeping it pretty simple. It's a very, very, very complicated simple thing and very tough thing what he's doing, but he makes it look easy and he keeps it simple. And yeah, he looks so calm out there too. Like, you never look at him and look like, oh man, things are speeding up for him, or he looks frazzled, or even if he hits a bad shot, which is rare, you don't ever feel like, oh, he's out of the golf tournament, or this is going to cause a downward spiral.
He can't recoup. You always are like, okay, that's no big deal. One shot for Scotty is no big deal. He's going to bounce back, because that's just what he does. And you know, too, that like I was referring to all the things he was saying, but the other part was like, I'm always trying to slow my heart rate. So he's constantly breathing. How to calm my body down? You know, to slow my heart rate. How can I get my heart rate to beat at the more of a consistent, or I shouldn't say consistent, but more of a, you know, generic or common heart rate that I have throughout the day? Like, that's when my brain thinks at its peak, and that's when I function at its peak. When I let it get crazy, adrenaline starts going, now I don't think as clearly, now I don't hit the shots that I'm capable of hitting. So it's like he's constantly trying to regulate his body and how his body's responding to what's around him, which is like, I think that's what Tiger did so well, you know. And Tiger even said, he's like, I was the most talented, I just worked harder than everybody else. And I would agree with him to a certain extent. I think he was super talented, but good. But he was also really, really, really good at the same things that Scotty's talking about. He's really good at, you know, calming his body, calming his mind, calming his heart rate, focusing on the moment. You know, he would be Tiger. Obviously, was way more fiery than Scotty, but he was very good at turning that around really quickly and refocusing on the next shot at hand or what he had to do in front of him. So they both do that really well, and you can see that sense of calmness. Now, it's so weird, like watching Tiger, you know, to your point, you know, of spiraling out of control. Whenever, I mean, you would see Tiger like lose his cool a little bit over a shot, but to that extent, you never thought like, oh, here we go. Tiger's going to make a couple doubles.
Yeah.
Like, never. You're like, Tiger's going to make three birdies. Like, it was like, you know, granted, we probably are looking at it's hindsight's 2020, right? We're looking at it after the fact. And we're analyzing this, but even when in the middle of it, like early on, like you wanted that to happen, and he just never did it. It was always like, oh,
well. And Tiger used to talk about his dad gave him as a kid. He gave him that 10-yard buffer, right? Because Tiger was an emotional guy. When he hit a shitty shot, Tiger would cuss and slam his club. But his dad was like, "You have 10 yards. You can hit a shitty shot. You have 10 yards. Once you walk past that 10 yards after you hit that shot, you're done. You're on to the next one. It's over." Mm-hmm. You know, fuss all you want for those 10 yards, and then it's on to the next one. And he had this unbelievable way of switching his focus. And, yeah, he had that little temper tantrum, and then he would turn off the switch, and he's back focused on the next shot. Okay, this ball's plugged in the bunker. How am I getting this down for par? You know, and now Scotty is much more – docile, composed, you know, flat line of a golfer than Tiger was. But
yeah, when it comes to the I guess the emotional, you know, outburst, he was like from a visual standpoint, but
from a visual,
I think they have the same the clock ticks very similarly inside, I would say, for both of those guys.
Scotty had that comment after the round. He was like talking to his buddies in the morning on Sunday, and he was like, "Man, I really wish I didn't want to win this bad." And he was talking about how much he wants to win and how little he, how much he hates losing. And like, yeah, so he's for a quote unquote boring person, he's got a lot of fire in there.
Yeah. He just does a good job of not, you know, showing it all the time. Which good or bad. Some people are like, also, man, I like seeing him get fiery. So,
yeah, I think you got to be who you are and use it the right way.
Yeah.
You know, Tiger was emotional, but he was emotional up and down, right? It wasn't like, you know, I'm not, this is not a comparison to either of these two guys. But when I was a kid playing junior golf, you know, my friends used to joke with me that I'm Italian. I have this Italian temper, and I used to get fucking heated. And we were leaving a junior event one time, and I got pissed. I played poorly, and my dad was like, "You know, it's all right to be emotional." He goes, "But you're only emotional negative." He's like, "When you make a birdie, you never smile."
Yeah, if you're gonna get emotional.
Yeah, that was his whole thing. It was like, if you're gonna get emotional, like at least smile. When you make a birdie or you hit a good shot, like enjoy the good shots. If you're going to be emotional, don't just get all pissy with the bad ones. And so, you know, Tiger had that ebb and flow, the up and the down. It wasn't just negative, but
I did
feel like I was watching Tiger out there to an extent of kind of like what I said earlier. It was, you know, a man against boys. It was just like, he was doing the classic Tiger playbook. I'm just going to keep hitting solid shots because I know I'm better than these guys, and I'm going to make a birdie here or there, and these guys are going to make a mistake, and they're going to fall back, and I'm going to have a 3 or 4 shot lead.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. I even said it to a buddy at the party. There was a 4-way tie. I said, I think we're going to look up in like an hour, and Scotty is going to have a 4 shot lead. I was wrong. It was only a 3 shot lead, but that's what happened. It was like, I'm better than you guys. You can't compete with me. And I don't even think Scotty had his A+ game this weekend either. I think he had a B+ game.
So, you know, that's always my comment to that quote when people use that and they try to compare or try to give advice for somebody coming down the stretch of a tournament. Most of them never done that before. So they try to like, oh, just hit it to the middle of the green. That's what Tiger does, and lets everybody else crumble. I'm like, the caveat to that is Tiger's middle of the green or Scotty's middle of the green is still he's on the edge. Like he just knows. It's not like I'm just going to hit the middle of the green. Oh, I'm going to make everybody else come get me. And his shot away from the pin is still so good. It's so precise. I mean, a perfect example is the shot that he hit on, was it 14? Where did he make birdie on 14? I mean, he knew. He's like, okay, I can use this slope. Everyone's like, oh, he just kind of hit to the middle of the green and used the slope. I'm like, he was hitting it exactly where he knew he needed to hit it to, one, make sure he had the easiest putt possible for a par, but also he gave him the best opportunity for a birdie. So, like, I think, you know, for – I think it sometimes gets they make that hit to the middle of the green or that safe play, they make it so common, like it's so average, and it's not average. Like, it takes so much discipline to hit a ball to, you know, 3-4 yards off of a pin, knowing that you're going to give yourself the easiest putt possible, when someone else looking at it like, oh, well, you had a 9-iron in your hand, why don't you just go right at the flag? It was like, oh, because if I miss it just 1 yard right of the target hitting at the pin, now the ball goes up and down the slope, and then I've got this impossible chip. But if I hit it, you know, 12 feet left, I've got the easiest putt for a 2-putt par and maybe even a really good chance at birdie. So it's just hard for people to see that sometimes. They just assume, you know, just hit it in the middle of the green and let everybody else just crumble. And I agree with you. I mean, we're on the same page here, but I just think it gets dumbed down. Like it's so simple to do that. And it's just not that. If it were that simple, then everybody, all those guys would do. They've heard this for the last 30 years watching Tiger. And if you're old enough, you've heard people talk about Jack doing it. But really, there's a method to the madness. Like, it's not just hit to the middle of the green. It's like, I'm going to favor the middle of the green, but I'm going to always be attacking the pin. I want that ball to be moving towards the pin. I think it's way more detailed and intricate than what we see on TV. Sure. And it's way more precise than we see. And I think he's just that much better. He can hit his spots that much better. To where if he does miss his spot, he's leaving himself in a perfect position to 2-putt and still have a birdie opportunity. So it's pretty incredible watch.
I think taking that one step further, Jane, I think you guys will both agree. You know, while they play conservatively in certain locations, they also are smart enough to know when to get aggressive. You know, there are certain times where they know this is green light. It doesn't matter if we're 5 or 6 up. This is green light for us. And it's always going to be green light for us. Yeah, we may be hitting it out to the left here on 12, but there's also going to be a shot later on that we find that we're gonna go ahead and we're going to throw it at the pin and go ahead. And instead of being 5 or 6 up, I'm getting 7 up. I'm getting 8 up, whatever it is.
Scotty, I mean, to that point, Scotty went for the green and 2 on 13 and 15 when he had a lead. Absolutely. In both of those positions. He was like, this is the higher percentage play for me, the way that I'm playing. And he's like, I need to stick to my game plan and go for it, you know? And, you know, on that topic, we can even just bring it up right now. I mean, I was watching Homa, you know, after making the double on 12, then he comes back on 13, and then he hits 3-wood off the tee and then lays up. And I know that that's his game plan. But at some point, if you're winning the golf tournament, you stick to your game plan, or tied, you stick to your game plan. But at some point, you got to be able to, on the back nine, you always heard people say this, on the back nine of any professional tournament, amateur tournament, that's when you sometimes you have to take some risk, and it may not pan out. But like, you can't play super conservative against the best player in the world, because that guy's not coming backwards. Like, he had 3 opportunities to make birdie, I'd say legitimate opportunities, between 13, 15, and... well, I will call it 14, I guess, with where that pin was. Even maybe 16.
With that funnel pin down
there. Yeah, maybe 16. So, I mean, 3 to possibly 4 opportunities, but you were 3 shots back. I mean, you got to take a chance. You got to make a move. And, you know, again, I mean, I commend him for kind of sticking to his game plan, but at the same time, I'm like, hey, you're 3 back. Like, you got to do something. Because Scotty's hitting driver and going for it. Like, You know, so you're basically by you hitting 3 wood off the tee, you just lost a shot.
You can't win doing that. Yeah. But you're exactly right. And like, I'm all for sticking to your game plan, but I definitely agree in certain situations, if you're going out there to win the golf tournament, there's some risk got to be involved. If you're coming from the back, you got to figure out a way to pick up 2 shots on a guy or pick up a shot on a guy where you have the opportunity to. And Max certainly has the distance to get there on 13 and 15. Oh, yeah. So not good. Was 13 where he laid up, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now some of that I think does have to do with shot shape. Max likes to play a cut. I don't think he loves to hit a draw there with that drive. And it's easy to overdo it as well, especially for a cut player trying to hit that draw. It's easy to overdo it and put it in the water. And if he does that, it's X anyways, you're done. But at the same time, if you cannot win the golf tournament, you can't make 3. And in that moment, he had to make 3 to put himself back in it. And I mean, the guy still had a great week, but at the same time, I mean, with Scotty and what he's doing, I don't know. I mean, it's funny because it's still to the point to where the press conferences with the other players, they're still congratulating him. It's very close to getting to a point where they're just like, I don't know how I can beat that guy. And when they start saying that, they can't beat him. It's over. Scotty's just going to go on a bigger tear.
Build the legend even bigger.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. Homa's got a hit driver there. Has to. Sorry. I love the game. I love Max Homa. I was actually rooting for him. Maybe put a couple bucks on him too. He's one of my favorite golfers out there. It's nice to see him get a high finish in a major because he has struggled. You know, he had a top 10 at the British end last season and now, you know, top, what, T3. But he's got a hit driver there. He's got to.
Maybe he was even – I hope he wasn't thinking this, but maybe he was even thinking about that, Mike. You know, like, hey, I haven't finished well in a major. Like, I don't think I can beat Scotty today. Let me just play solid golf, and if I can finish, you know, second, third, or fourth here, get some confidence from this tournament. You know, you hate to think that he would even go there, but maybe. I mean, I don't know. Every player is different. Like, if that's what he needed, and if he was playing, I mean, he's played enough with Scotty. He knows what he's capable of, and maybe he just said, you know what, there's not a chance here. My best chance to beat him is to play good, solid golf and maybe get 1 or 2 and hope that I get lucky and he makes a couple bogeys.
I don't think he wasn't going to beat him anyways. What he would have needed, he started the day at 5, Max?
Five or six.
He started at 5 because he shot 73 in the third round.
That's right.
Yeah, he started at 5, so he would have had to have a 66 just to get into a playoff.
Yeah.
To get to 11. He's
totally capable of doing that.
Totally capable. But I had said during the day, someone had asked me at the club that morning, what do you think is the winning score? And I said, Scotty's going to get to at least 10. So anyone else has to get to at least 10 to have a fighting chance.
Yeah.
And ended up being 11. Those guys were going to have to play their ass off.
Sure. But I mean, once you squeeze that gap, it's not always, you know, things become a little bit more free. Like on 16, he hits that shot in there to a couple feet, and makes birdie. Did he hit close to 16?
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe if he's only got a one-shot lead, you know, maybe he doesn't swing as freely. Or if he's got a two-shot lead, maybe he doesn't swing as freely. You never know. When things get tighter, then that changes your shot shape and what you're trying to play. So you just never know. And that's why I think I always feel like you play a golf tournament, you know, 54-hole tournament for some people who like those, or a 72-hole tournament. You know, once you get to the back nine on Sunday or the final round, you know, if you—that's when you have to take some risk, and you have to calculate that and look at it. But your goal is to win the golf tournament. You know, if you're within a couple of shots, your goal is to win the tournament. Your goal should not be, let me just make some pars here and just, you know, see what happens. And if I finish fifth, I finish fifth. I mean, that's bullshit. Like, you're playing to win. You play to win the game.
Thanks, Herm.
Yeah, but I mean,
that was
Edwards, yeah.
Was that Herm? Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Oh, but playoffs, I mean, was the,
but yeah,
was
it's, the other guy. Essentially, it's like, you know, you're playing to win. You know, you're playing in a tournament. So it was like, okay, I wouldn't normally do this. This is outside of my game plan. But, hey, I want to win. And if I feel like I would make a birdie here and maybe I catch fire and make two or three in a row, I can add some heat to the person who's leading or what have you. And you roll with it, you know. So, I mean, I'm not criticizing Max Homa. I mean, I love watching him. And I think he thought he did what was right at that time, and I think moving forward in the next major, if he's in contention, I think he maybe does it a little bit differently. And, yeah, and I think, because I think he looks, he's like, you know what, I didn't really give it a shot. Like, what if, you know, what if I hit driver and hit a great iron shot and made eagle, and now I'm only one shot back? You know, what does Scotty do then? Does Scotty lay up then, coming in behind him? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Does Scotty Scheffler win the Grand Slam this year?
That's a big ask. I mean, he's obviously the favorite. I mean, who else? If you had to bet on someone, he's the only bet you have. I mean, obviously now winning the Masters, but like, had you have done this a week ago, he's still the only bet you have. Like, there's no one else that you would have bet on to have the potential to pull this off. I mean, statistically, I would say that that's probably improbable, but.
Oh, well, yeah.
On the backside of it.
Would you crazy. Be shocked?
No, not at this point I wouldn't be. I'd be celebratory. I mean, how are you shocked on a guy that does what he's done on the golf course over the past 6 weeks? I mean, my goodness.
I would say two of the remaining three look good. I mean,
so you think he gets three this year?
No, I mean, that would be a stretch, but
I think two of the three,
based on the way he plays at Pinehurst, number two, with the incredible amount of control that he has over his approach shots and as straight as he drives it, that, I mean, it really makes sense. I mean, that obviously you guys know that golf course. It's a true test. It's similar to Augusta. It's a second shot golf course. You know, now especially the way that they've changed it. If you're driving it relatively well, I mean, it's can you put the ball close to the hole? And then you're going to have some really crazy undulating putts. But if you're great with your iron game and you can control the ball coming into the green, you've got a good shot. And same thing with Valhalla. I know that depending on how they set it up, if they go with the kind of thick, rough, you know, that approach, it still plays to his. I mean, he's the best off. I mean, tee to green, he's the best. So,
well, I'd also think the Open Championship would be great for him, even though that's probably been his worst major when you look at his track record. He's only had one top 10 at the Open, but you would think in shitty conditions with how solid he hits the ball and how he flushes it, which is important in wind and rain, and
yeah,
and how he controls it, which is important in wind and rain. You'd think he'd be in how good his short game is around some of those goofy green complexes there. Think that would set up well for him too?
Yeah. I mean, from a mental standpoint, sure. I think he hits the ball. I don't see him flight the ball a whole lot. I don't see him get real creative or, you know, now maybe he hasn't really, the demand isn't there for playing American golf either. So I just haven't seen him play enough golf overseas to see that creativity and hit some of these kind of unique shots. I mean, he's got a unique swing, unique footwork, but in terms of the shot shape, and I'm not saying he can't do it. I know he can do it. I mean, he grew up in Texas, so yeah. I'm sure he knows how to control the ball in the wind, but just haven't seen him we haven't seen him forced into doing that often. And obviously he doesn't have a great track record there. So that's the only reason I put that at the bottom of those two. Doesn't mean he can't play well and win.
Now, granted, when I say his worst track record, his worst finish is like T23.
Yeah.
yeah. He's got like a T21, a T23, and a T8.
Yeah. That's good.
That's something good. Like that. But yeah, that's his worst major. So it's, yeah. Do you think this is good for golf? Having one dominant figure like this?
It worked before.
However, the personalities are very different.
Personalities are, but Tiger wasn't necessarily the most personable during his reign. I mean, Scotty is someone who is very tough to take any negatives away from. I mean, he does what he does on the golf course. He leaves it there. He does a great job. He doesn't really have any sort of controversy surrounding him. He doesn't have controversial takes. Is it fun and more entertaining sometimes when that guy does? Sure. I'm not going to disagree with that. But on the backside of it, when we look at what's great for golf, and we all have kids at this point, he's a great figurehead for the sport. He's someone who I would be proud for my sons to emulate. There's a lot to take away from what he does on and off the golf course to say, hey, this is how you want to conduct yourself. This is how you want to be. I mean, the guy is just incredibly likable. I don't know of anyone who's really had anything negative to say about him, not on tour, in the media, or anyone that I've ran into.
Yeah.
For golf is subjective, but on the backside of that, when you look at it and say, who would I want my kids to model themselves after? I don't think there's a better person than Scottie Scheffler. And I think as a parent, that's a big thing to be able to lean into or to go back to. So yeah, for golf, I think it's fantastic to watch the guy. I think ultimately everyone's now at a point to where we're tuning in. We want to see what Scottie does. That's good for golf. When you have people tuning in to see what one player is doing, regardless of all the other great players in the field, it's good for golf because it's getting to a point now where the question is immediately after the first round of a golf tournament, when it's in golf all day because you've been on the course, hey, what's Scottie do today? You know, that's where it's gotten to, and we haven't seen that since Tiger. I know you mentioned earlier some guys have had some hot streaks. They haven't been like this. I don't know of the last time that we had guys run basically – 3 out of 4 tournaments and missed the fourth tournament by a 5-footer. He's an echelon that is totally different than what we've seen from Rory, from what we've seen from Brooks, DJ, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, you know, any of the top 5 players in the world. But when you look at it, when the cookie crumbles, if you will,
yeah,
this guy is the real deal. On the course, we all have to give him his due, and I think it is great for the game.
I agree with you real fast, Jay. I just want to get my point real fast, I want to give the opposite point of what I've heard, because I agree with you. I think a dominant figure that can maybe, I don't want to say chase Tiger's records, but you know, just a dominant figure. So is he going to win again? I do think you're right, and that's good for the game. What I have heard from a couple people is because Scottie is a little bit boring, he's not that commanding presence out there. Some people are like, I don't want to watch Scottie win by 4 again. I've heard that a couple of times. Now, I am under the belief that I think parity can be bad in all sports, in that sometimes the dominant figures, dominant teams are better for entertainment of, you know, the sport.
Yeah. I mean,
Jay, I apologize. I'm jumping here too real quick, but I would say
you are, you're cutting me off, but 100%,
100%. Thank you for acknowledging.
Go.
When the Yankees went on that run in the late 90s, early 2000s, they sold out every game.
And a lot of people watched. I mean, and if you think about, I mean, on that baseball tip, you know, love him or hate him, when Barry Bonds was hitting home run after home run after home run, you were watching. When the Patriots were going to the Super Bowl every year, you were watching. Everybody was watching. You love him or hate him, you tune in. So, and again, that's the, to your point, Mike, I think with Scottie, he is so subdued and so vanilla and khaki. And, you know, it's like, who are you? I want to know who you are, because I want to decide if I like you or if I want to pull against you. And I think that's the PGA Tour's job to kind of highlight these guys and give us a little bit more about them. And I think we're probably going to see more of the same. Like, I think this guy is a truly, he wears his heart on his sleeve, in a sense that, like, I don't think there's a whole lot of facades with him, which I appreciate, because it seems like a lot of the stars that we have in a lot of these sports, you know, they've all got some skeletons in the closet and they all have a vice, and I mean, I'm not saying that he doesn't have one, but it doesn't seem like it's a really negative one. The guy seems like, hey, this is who I am. You know, I'm not afraid to tell you what I like and what I believe. And if you don't like it, you don't like it. That's fine. But I'm not going to fake it. So, you know, I'm on the fence with it, you know, because I do think it's better that we have somebody that's dominating, because I feel like in the end of the day, people want to watch, they want to watch greatness more than they want to watch drama. Like, if that makes sense, I think we've got a little bit of both, but if you're like, hey, you're about to see something that no one has ever done, you're going to tune in rather than, hey, do you want to see Phil beat so-and-so, Phil Mickelson beat this other person? It's like the battle. Like, do you want to see a mediocre battle that's really intense, or do you want to see the best of all time? I would rather see the best of all time. I'd rather tune in to say, hey, I was there when this, you know, this player did this, the greatest player did this, rather than, oh, I remember that battle of these two guys, these two mediocre stars. It was a good battle towards the end. But it's not, you don't remember it as much as when you can say, like when Tiger won the Grand Slam, he won the Masters in 2001. I was sitting on a dock in Lake Anna, and with our team at JMU, and we watched him win on the dock, all of us sitting around. I mean, it was like, I remember exactly where I was when he did that, because I knew I was watching something that no one else would do. That's pretty cool. So I'm not going to say Scotty's at that level yet, but, it could be
close. It's unfair to even say that. It's unfair to even, you know, make that correlation right now. And that's the tough part, is that as any time in golf where we see someone go on a run, we want to try to relate it to Tiger. It's both unfair to Tiger and to that player, quite frankly, because I think overall, once Scotty, now let's say Scotty wins 7 of the next 12 majors, we can start having those talks. Like, and he's posting up 5-6 win years in, you know, 3-4 year runs. We can start having those talks. We're on the precipice of seeing a potential run, because we've never seen someone right now go on a run like he's on currently and have held the number one world golf ranking for as long as he has, while also winning as much as he has. We've had some guys hold the world golf ranking for a good bit, but not while also winning as many golf tournaments in such a prolific fashion the way Scotty has.
He's widening that gap.
He's starting to put himself in that conversation, and I think it's unfair to both of them to have that conversation at this point. But, you know, on the back side of that, yeah, it's close. Like, he's starting to create that storyline, and if he continues the way he is, let's say he does run on the Grand Slam this year. Let's say he does run it. We'd have that conversation this fall. 100%.
Oh yeah, that's huge.
He knocks the next three out and throws another tour win in there between now and then. We can have that conversation. I mean, when's the next time you guys think he's going to lose?
Yeah,
you guys had to think about that. That's the crazy part. You couldn't answer that quickly. You couldn't just say he's not going to win this week. You can't say that right now. That's how close it is.
I think the thing that kind of stands out to me with him is, like, if you look at, I mean, we kind of briefly mentioned this. Maybe I was talking to you, Mike, before this little run in the last four events, he had not won a golf tournament since the Players of last year. So it's not like he was winning every third or fourth event. I mean, that was 20 events roughly or more sent in between wins. But the thing that is so striking is that the way that he played and how the finishes that he had, I mean, there was like stretches of 7-8 events inside the top five. Then he had a finish 23rd at the British, 31st at the FedEx. Then we go back on this top five finish, 2-3 in a row. Then a 17th finish at the American Express this year. Like, oh, wow, he played so terribly. And then he's back on that run, top 10, top five. And so, and on with in the middle of all of that, there is the, you know, the strokes gained world or the statistical world, where we're looking at how well he's playing, how he's hitting the ball. And he's like, this is the best ball striking. Again, we always want to look for the player that's doing something we've never seen. Like, they're like, we haven't seen somebody hit the ball this well since Tiger, like tee to green. He just doesn't putt as well as Tiger. And now as he's starting to kind of figure this out, now we're starting to see like, oh, wow, is this going to happen? We want to always hope, the humans are hopeful people and we want to see the potential, whether we ever reach that or not. But that's what's fun. We're like, oh, man, this guy could do this. He could do this. He could do this. And then all of a sudden he starts doing it. You're like, man, this is cool. This is awesome. I'm into this, you know? So I think it was the potential was there based on the way he was hitting the ball tee to green. He just didn't putt well. I'm like, wow, this guy could hit the ball and putt the ball as well as Tiger or finish as well as Tiger if he could putt. And now all of a sudden we're starting to see him putt and you're like, wow, this is happening. This is happening. So
yeah, it's wild. It's hard to even put into words, you know, or say it in a different way than what we've kind of talked about already in the last couple months this year. But it is fun to watch. Again, I don't root against Scotty. I don't even necessarily root for him either. It's just impressive to watch. You know, there's a lot of other guys on tour that I would say I'm more of a fan of. But I don't catch myself rooting against Scotty like I may do some guys.
Yeah.
Bryson. but yeah, it's
so let me ask you this. Do you root for Justin Thomas more than Scotty Scheffler?
Do I? Yeah, unfortunately, right now.
Because he needs people to root for him. That's kind of a tough question because in Scotty's last 2 years of dominance, Justin's played poorly. So it's like, okay, Justin needs some help. We need to pull for him.
Yeah. I pull for. How about that? McLean happened to our not helping our argument with how he missed the cut. So for the listeners, if you somehow did not pay attention to this, he was even par for the tournament with four holes to go on Friday. The cut was plus six. He goes double bogey, double bogey, bogey, double bogey, seven over the last four holes to miss the cut by one when he was in contention at even par.
That's exactly right.
Now, if he were to finish it even, I don't think he's going to get to 11 under to get into a playoff. But still, you're thinking Friday night, you get in the house at even, you're six back of the lead. Like, let's go.
Yeah, anything's possible. We come out on Saturday and shoot three or four under par, and now you're a couple back going into Sunday. You're in the mix. Anything's possible.
That was tough. Tough to watch. Tough scene for our boy there, McLean.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it just goes to show how close it can be at Augusta when you're at a major championship venue like that and how you can get exposed quickly with some small mistakes. And if you compound those with takes on the backside of that, it's what happens, unfortunately. The guy did look good through, 32 holes. Unfortunately, he got bit by Augusta. And, I don't think it's one of those things. What's the best way to put this? At a venue like that, you don't condemn yourself for the remainder of the year when something like that happens because you saw a lot of players get exposed. You saw a lot of players get put in situations. It may have been in round one, two, three, or four. We saw a lot of players all of a sudden put themselves in a bad spot, compound it by getting too aggressive, and ultimately that's what happened. Yeah. Not saying JT got too aggressive on 16, 17, but all of a sudden, it can happen quickly at a major championship venue, especially Augusta National. So, I don't think that's something that's going to take the wind out of his sails for the rest of the year. It certainly took it out of him for the week, but I think he's at a great venue this week that will certainly play into his strong points of his game. And hopefully he can go out and have a good week and put himself back in contention.
Yeah. I mean, he messed up most of that. I mean, he had a terrible layup on 15. He laid up into the water and kind of just hit this really big snipe hook. You know, he hit it in the fairway, but left on 15, so he's behind those trees, and tried to hit this big old helicopter snap hook, and hit it way too hard, and it just took off with the hook and went chasing through and all the way down into the water. It's like, dude, just if you're gonna lay up, right? Lay like up. The old expression says, it's like that's you don't need to go and say. Do all that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and then his short game just let him down, you know, the rest of the way.
And yep. That's normally, you
know, he missed an awful spot on 16. But then makes double. Happened. Like, just get out of there with bogey. You hit in a terrible spot. Just make bogey and get the fuck out of there. It makes double.
I don't know. I still keep trying to figure out. I mean, I'm not a big fan of his golf swing. I love his wedge play in a short game. Outside of his putting. But like wedge shots, pitch shots, short game shots, like he is one of the best in the game when it comes to that. And I watch him hit wedge shots. It reminds me of Dustin Johnson for like that 3-year stretch before he went over to live, where he was just every wedge shot he hit was just it was like it was cheating. He would hit a 320 yard drive with a little cut, and then he'd get like a 100 for him, like a little sand wedge from 115, and it looked like he was chipping it. And JT looks like that when he's on point. Like, it looks like slow mo. The rhythm is so good, and it's just, he's right on the money. I just think for the longer clubs and the putting, it just, whatever he's doing just seems hard. Like the way that he swings, it seems difficult, like to be repetitive. And you know, I don't know. I mean, you hate to tell a guy who's got to make, like, you know, big swing changes, but something's not matching up, you know. And you don't want to blame it on his dad. His dad's been working with him for so long and understands him, but
yeah,
maybe he does need something different, a different look, and, you know, to change things up a little bit, because it hasn't been very consistent.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong, Jay, in anything that you've said. He went on a little bit, I don't want to say a tear, but he started playing well last fall, early months of this season. And my hopes are that, you know, this doesn't deflate him and he can get back out there, because we all know he's one of the best players out there when he's playing well. He's a gritty player. He's tough to beat in the moment. I mean, say what you will about where he falls on the ranking list, all time, current, whatever you want to say. On the back nine, if you're tied for the lead in it with him, he's not someone who you necessarily face, because he's going to be gritty. He's going to be aggressive. He's going to play well in most circumstances. So I think he's a really good figure for the game of golf. I think he's someone that offers that little bit of fire from the American side, which historically we've been not, I don't want to say judged incorrectly by, but ultimately I have heard, and even when I was I've been overseas a couple of times, I've heard and say, you know, you guys don't really have that, you know, that personality that, you know, some of the Europeans have. And I think JT has that in him when he plays well. And when he plays, that can, you know, put some trophies on the mantle, and he's someone that can represent the game of golf for an American side in a very good perspective. So I hope he finds it. I hope he gets it back.
Yeah. I mean, I think most people in America, you know, if they're American golf fans, they would probably like to see, you know, see Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler. They want to see those guys play well. I mean, they're fan favorites. Everybody seems to, whatever side you fall, you like one of those three guys, it seems like, or Tony Finau, if you're into him. I like Tony Finau. I think he's a good guy. I like him. Like, he kind of matches with my personality. I like him. But I agree. I think you're 100% right. I mean, I think people like him, and, you know, he's got a good fan base. And it's good for the game when he plays well, because of that, he does wear his heart on his sleeve, and people, as we've seen with other, you know, players from Europe, and they tend to have a bigger following when you kind of, I don't want to say pick a side, but when you're a little bit more emotional and you kind of take a stance, then you get some followers, and they will be lifelong fans. And if maybe that's kind of the criticism on Scottie Scheffler, is he's just a little bit too in the middle. And just kind of, you know, there's no clear path on which side he falls on anything. It's just kind of like, hey, I'm here to play golf and nothing fancy here. And people sometimes want that. They want to see your flaws and they want to get behind you because they want to be like, hey, I do the same thing. I do that. I've messed up like that. So I think, you know, there's something to be said for that with Justin Thomas, but I'm sure.
Do you think it's unfair criticism for Scottie Scheffler though? Like the guy does, like we want him to be a dick. like almost. And that's
not the best way to put it. I don't think we want him to be a dick.
No, but you get what I'm saying. Like you want him to show more emotion. You want to show all the, like, wait, the guy's doing everything right. It sucks that it's at the point where it's like, we're asking more from Scotty than he's giving and we're wanting more. And it's like, why?
The guy's lonely at the top, bro.
Job, man. Yeah.
It's lonely at the top.
Criticism, yeah. I mean, from where I sit.
Nobody's asked. I don't want Scotty to be a dick. He's just a
you,
little
bland. You know what I'm saying. That may have been a bad choice of words.
Yeah. He is who he is. He's not going to change. I don't think he should change. He shouldn't try to change. If I was Scotty Scheffler, I would do exactly what the fuck he's doing. I think Jordan Spieth's a great guy, a nice guy, but he's more eccentric, right? Scotty's just bland, boring, vanilla, however you want to say it, and mm-hmm. that's just who he is. But he's fucking really good at golf.
Well, if you want some, you know, drama, just watch his feet when he hits a golf shot. I mean, that should get you guys all riled up. They're like, I watch this guy hit the ball. He makes this. It's not that pretty of a swing. Like, I mean, the backswing, it does get into some good spots for the most part, but it's not as rhythmic and smooth. You know, it's not like he's watching, you know, a poetry in motion or anything. It's still a little clunky. And then his feet coming through or just after impact or sliding all over the place, he's falling down, fake poses. And you're like, what just happened? Like this guy is the number one player in the world. So that kind of back to our point, they were talking about Tiger and the similarities. I think that is one thing that stands apart in my opinion. And you can even ask Tiger, even commented on this. And they said, this is early in his career. What do you think separates you from the other golfers? Is it your putting? Is it your chipping? Or is it your golf swing? And he was like, it's my golf swing. He's like, I swing it good. And we're not arguing. I mean, you're right. He does. But I mean, if you go back and look at his golf swing, I mean, it's a pretty golf swing. I mean, it's like people analyze the hell out of that thing, but it's like just the angles, everything about it looked just like so clean, so sharp, so rhythmic, so in balance. It was just like, man, that's a good golf swing. Similarly to what people say about Rory's swing. But I would say Tiger's swing was technically probably more sound than Rory's. But again, like the golf swing looks so, so powerful and so clean and so aligned. And then you watch Scotty swing, you're like, whoa, what happened there? Where did that ball go? And like, you can't tell where the ball went on the TV unless you have the shot tracer up. You're like, oh man, did he hit that one okay? Like, oh, yep, he hit it 320 right down the middle. Ball didn't curve at all. Don't worry about his feet. That's just the way he does it. But as a fan, you're like, oh, it's not as aesthetically, you know, pleasing to watch that swing all over the place. You know, his feet and the, you know, Olay swing. Yeah. But
you think Ho-Sung Choi has been watching me like, Scotty, I've been doing this for years. Like, what do you mean?
Stole my move.
Yeah,
stole it. Copyrighted that thing. Stole it.
Right.
All right. So yeah, let's get into a couple others. McLean, one who I was thinking of as Jay was talking about not the prettiest golf swing in the world. You know who is fun to watch win golf club? Ludvig Åberg, whatever the hell you want to call the guy. Man, it is fun to watch him hit a golf ball. First major appearance, and he settles for. What's that?
I don't know how you don't think it swings that good. I think it swings great.
I said it was awesome.
Oh, I thought you said you don't think it swings that great. I'm like, what are you talking about?
No, I think it's fucking. No, I think it's awesome. I think it's great to watch. It swings amazing. Fantastic. I mean, first major appearance ever at Augusta, and he comes in second. And like I said earlier, one bad decision / swing on 11. And man, okay, give me an over under. How soon does he win a major? Over under is the next, I'll put the over under as next 6.5 events, 6.5 majors. It's over under that he gets his first one.
That's good.
It's a really good number. If you just said 8 to 10, I'd have taken the under. I think 6.5 is a really good one. I think it's inevitable. The guy is solid. My God, does he drive the ball well? I mean, he hits the ball with no shape, which is hard to do.
Yeah.
Watching the drives that he hits, he stands up there and he just rips it. It's coming out at 180, 180 plus, and it's just dead nut center. Like, when he hits it with shape, you're like, oh, whoa, that caught me off. He just rips it. He drives the ball as good as anyone out there in the game currently does. The rest of his game is very sound and solid, but it's tough to say a major. I think he probably wins 3 times over the next year and a half. I don't know if any of those are a major, but if it was, it would not surprise me. I like to win a U.S. Open with the way that he hits the golf ball. Like, Pinehurst would be a great venue for him. He's going to drive the ball very straight. He hits the ball up into the sky, can land it in the quadrant that he needs to. Certainly has enough spin to hold the green. Ludwig is – that guy is – he is so good. Impressed the heck out of me, especially on Sunday. And it's tough because I look back and it's like, all right, let's say he doesn't double 11. How does that change the outcome of not only the way he plays the remainder of the holes, but also does it put any pressure on Scotty? Obviously we won't know that, but he was right there. And to have played in his first major championship and played and contended and hit the shots that he hit would not surprise me at all.
Yeah, I believe that.
Sorry. Were you hearing the applause? I clicked on his scorecard on the masters.com and it started playing the shot by shot. So I apologize there for the sound.
Yeah, no, I mean, going back to it. Yeah. I could see this guy hoist a major championship this year and dude would have no surprise by it. To guarantee it, it's tough, but he's a US Open venue player. He's someone who I think is going to contend well at the Masters next year. I think he's going to play well at Valhalla, but his game to me just looks like I'm going to win U.S. Opens high. I'm going to hit the ball far. I'm going to hit the ball straight. And that to me is something that I think, you know, you can go out to a U.S. Open venue and play very well and contend. Exactly.
Jay Bird.
Yeah. I mean, no, I agree. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I think the stats have said that he drives the ball incredibly well. He's kind of we've got such a short or small sample size with him in terms of the shot link stats. So it's really hard to kind of really, I mean, he hasn't even played a full year yet. So it's hard to really know where his strengths are, or whether that was just, just him getting acclimated to playing on the PGA Tour. So I kind of want to see, I mean, watching him swing, it looks like he drives the ball incredibly well. It looks like he can hit some really great iron shots. I don't know at what consistency, but for the most part, it seems pretty good. The stats have told us a different story, that maybe he's lacking in some of those scoring clubs and doesn't hit those quite as well. I did watch him hit a couple weird wedge shots. I don't know if it was on 8 on Sunday. He had like a 50, 60 yard pitch shot. He missed the green right and then sculled it over the green, which looks like something that I would do. So, those are the little things that maybe I think that are holding him back, you know, from really, you know, kind of getting on that dominant level. But based on everything else we've seen, it wouldn't surprise me if he could clean all those things up, those little things up, because he's obviously doing a lot of them really well at a consistent rate.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I had, you know, I think I mentioned this, you know, what, I'm not going to say a knock I had on him, but a question I had on last fall was a lot of the events he was playing weren't the hardest venues, you know, and he had some, a lot of high finishes. And it's like, okay, well, let's see what he does on some hard venues. Well, you go to this year, T9 at Farmers, Torrey Pines, hard venue. Second at Pebble and Spyglass, hard venues. You know, top 20 at the Genesis, Riviera, hard venue. T25 at Arnold Palmer, hard venue. Solo eighth at the Players, hard venue. And now a second at the Masters when it was playing incredibly hard. Yeah. So kind of shut me up there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you, like I said, we just don't have the sample size yet. So if we can see a full year, then we can start to see, you know, what is this guy capable of? And I think a lot of people said the same thing about Tiger, and Tiger came out with much higher pedigree. I mean, we all know the Curtis interview where like, hey, you'll learn. You'll learn. Like, actually, it's the opposite, you know. Maybe this guy's going to teach everybody else, you know, the way it needs, the way we need to play or the way we need to approach, you know, competitive golf. But, and maybe that's similar. I mean, again, I'm not comparing him directly to Tiger, but the mentality and just the lack of visibility of this guy's game. And we just haven't seen him play enough. And if we see him play a little bit more and we can really start to accumulate a full year of stats and playing all of the events, and you're like, okay, this guy can do it. He's only played in one major and he finished second. So let's just see what he does in the other majors. And he's proven himself in some really high profile events leading up into this tournament. You know, like I said, how many runner ups? You said two runner ups already before he even got to the Masters. So
yeah,
I mean, the guy, he can do it. He can do it. I mean, he's in the mix. So it's incredible, though, just like how advanced these guys are coming out. Like, that's, I mean, I go back a couple years ago when Morikawa and Hovland, and I put Matt Wolf on the bottom of that list, which I still stand by. So he was definitely the worst player of that bunch. But even still, they came out with guns a blazing. I mean, they were winning tournaments at 22 years old, and Morikawa majors, which, you know, is pretty incredible that they can come out that quickly and just dominate, you know. So it's, and be that seasoned. You're not that far away from like being a 15, 16 year old kid, like, you know, playing video games in the basement, you know.
I want to get to picks here in a second, but since you brought him up, Victor Hovland, what the hell, dude? Like, what? Stop tinkering, man. Like, what are you doing? You were like second to Scotty, the best player in the world last fall, in like an unbelievable Ryder Cup, and now you're dicking around and new coaches all the time. And man, what are you doing?
Like, that's that. WD, that's what Scotty's not doing. That's what Scotty's not doing. He's not trying to get better. And that's that. Jay and I know a ton of players that have been out there and been playing well. And it's the curse of not knowing whether or not you're good enough and constantly trying to advance. And it ended up costing them their careers. It cost them their playing abilities. And especially with a lot of the guys that, you know, Jay and I played, not have been, you know, one of the top players on the PGA Tour. Certainly Jay was a lot closer than I was, but on the backside of that, you constantly look at how can I get better and how can I make that next switch. And it's tough to understand when what you have is good enough. It's tough to understand that Victor Hovland didn't understand that what he had was good enough. And he's obviously making these changes now, making these switches, and it's obviously not working for him all of a sudden. So on the backside of that, it's like, do you revert? Do you try to go back? Do you have to tuck your tail in between your legs? For me, it's like, Victor, what did you do last fall? Forget everything you've done over the last 6 months. Call Joe Mayo, get back in the room, and just figure it out. And it might come from hearing a familiar voice just saying, Victor, you've got this. You are still that player. Quit trying to overdo what you're doing and just win tournaments. Because that's what Scheffler's doing right now. He's not working on his swing. He's not working on his short game. He's got it dialed in, and he's out there just collecting cash. And I mean, you talk about the ATM, man, the guy is a human ATM right this second.
Yeah.
Hovland's last again around the green.
He left Joe Mayo.
PGA Tour.
It's been 2 months, right? Roughly.
I think it might have been. I think it came out 2 months ago. I think it might have been longer than that. But yeah, he's dead last strokes gained around the green.
I mean, we go back and forth with Joe, and you know, obviously for the listeners, if you haven't looked this guy up, he's a very opinionated teacher. He's a big personality.
Can you do your impersonation?
No. I can't. I can't.
I was gonna dance, monkey, dance.
Yeah. You gotta hit 10 degrees down, Mike. If you hit down, the ball will go up, it'll spin. You gotta hit down.
I never said.
But anyway, like I said, he's a big personality, but I don't know what he actually teaches the players when they're one-on-one. Like I see what he posts on Instagram and the pictures. I think the Instagram stuff is a little bit more for show. I think he's trying to create a buzz, and I think it's a marketing tool. You know, bad press is good press. Anytime people are questioning you, then people are paying attention to you, which we are. So we want to see what you're going to say next. And I think he's a smart guy. I mean, I really do. And I think there's some validity to what he's saying. And I think the posts that we see are attention grabbers. And he obviously helped Victor. Like last year, before they parted ways, he pitched and chipped and bunker play was the best that he's ever done. I mean, by far. And now here we see he's reverting kind of back to his old self.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I was thinking he was going to have a massive year, and it's just it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fun character, easy to like, and man, it's not good this year. Anyone else you want to discuss from the Masters before we make our picks for RBC?
Tiger Woods.
Oh yeah, Tiger.
Yeah. Tiger.
Really? We had to bring that up?
I forgot. Sorry.
Tiger?
I don't have my notes up. I'm all out of sorts here.
Where are you right now?
Because he was DFL. No, I'll say my piece on Tiger real fast, and I'll let you guys go. I thought it was unbelievably impressive what he did the first 2 days in those conditions to make the cut comfortably, set the record. But he just got tired. As simple as that, you know. I don't know if we're never going to see him win again. I'll say it. If he makes me look like a fool, then that's fine. I'll allow that, accept that. But it was cool. I mean, I was thoroughly impressed what I saw those first 2 days. And then I was thoroughly underwhelmed what I saw the following 2 days. I don't think it'd be that bad the following 2 days.
Thought he would shoot 75-75, you know, roughly. Somewhere.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Thought he'd shoot 6 or 7 over par on the weekend. And, you know, I knew the conditions weren't going to get much better. I mean, a little bit, but not much better. And I think he played really well given the circumstances on Thursday and Friday. And I knew his body would wear down. I was really impressed with how he finished on Friday, given the fact that he had to play 22 holes. I was like, man, I'm getting ready to watch another Tiger Woods WD here. You know, but luckily he didn't do it, which is great. But I think you chalk it up to 49 years old, or 48, I guess. I'm sorry, 48. And lack of competition, you know, not playing a whole lot. And then a body that's been totally, you know, dilapidated over the last 25 years. So, and then the shell of the greatest player of all time, you know, and you put that in there. Hey, I can still make the cut at the Masters because I still have those instincts in me, but I'm a shell of what I was. And that's kind of what we see. So
I have a couple takes. Incredible that he walked 72 holes of a golf course. I think that is a ton to take away from this, because if he can start doing that, I think ultimately he can win again. I think he can. We can all do more. Now, I don't know what the wear and tear in the recovery was really like. I can certainly estimate what I feel like it was. But if he's able to walk 72 holes, we all know there's a ton of rust, lack of competition, as Jay just alluded to. What he did on Thursday and Friday was absolutely incredible with everything that he's had to deal with. You certainly could see that there were pain in some shots. You could see that, you know, the way he was walking was certainly not without pain to a certain extent. What I'm proud of is that he stuck in there and he signed his scorecard Sunday or Saturday and Sunday, and he posted a 72 hole event. Walking that golf course, which, you know, as everyone says, you don't need elation until you've actually been there. Yeah, we all get it. I get it. We're there. But Tiger did. When times got tough, he stuck it out. I love that he did that with the amateur, Neil Shipley, on Saturday, and stuck it out and rode it out to the 82 that he posted. But he stuck it out and played Sunday. I apologize. But he stuck it out and he rode the horse all 72 holes. There's a lot to take away from that. I think his expectations, where he finished, I think his expectations were obviously to have played better. But I think our expectations, most everyone thought, and I heard it numerous times, certainly got from numerous guys, that what point is Tiger going to withdraw? And he didn't. He did it. He played 72 holes. There's so much to be taken away by that, other than just what he shot, what the scorecard said, what the leaderboard said. There's a lot to be taken away from what he's gone through. So
what did he give Neil Shipley? What did he give Neil Shipley on the eighth hole?
I don't know, but Neil Shipley's response is like Olympic level, Olympic level, like just unbelievable.
I mean, there must have been something said or something on that note. Probably if whatever note he gave him, I'm sure there's a camera that's on him that we can pull it up, and I haven't seen it yet, but like, oh.
I love how Shipley looked at the at the Augusta member, like, how do I answer this? Like, nothing happened. Like, wait, do you know about this? Like,
it was fantastic. But I do think we saw some signs of who Tiger could be. The tough part, I was actually, it was on Saturday that I was watching, and he made that birdie putt on the, and didn't give a fist pump, but he gave a little bit of some enthusiasm. I was like, oh, come on, Tiger, let's make a couple of birdies. Just put yourself somewhere in there. And then all of a sudden, I got to go check out. I forgot something. I got to go back in, you know, my normal grocery store run. And I get back to the house up at 6 over, and I'm just like, what happened?
Yeah.
And of course, I pull it up, and he had a tough three-hole stretch there. But, you know, I think there is a lot to take away from it. You know, he said, you know, this could be the start of him potentially getting back to working into playing once a month. I'd love to see it. So good for the sport. We'd all love to see him play well. Mm-hmm. The thing that I hate is that the Heritage is a week after the Masters, because this is a venue that I think he could go pick apart. It's flat. He doesn't have to walk up and down hills. It's a short golf course. Like, this to me, with where his game is, just fits him absolutely perfectly at this point.
He's only he's only played this tournament like once or twice.
Yeah, I can tell you more about that off air. but it is it's something that I hope we get to see more. I know I tuned in. I was watching every shot. I was excited to watch every shot. I almost didn't care what he shot. I was just excited to watch him swing a golf club. And I think there's a lot more people out there that are just like me that are excited every time they get to see Tiger strike a golf club or strike a golf ball and swing a golf club, and I hope we get to see more of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. All right, anything else? We want to get the picks.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. Yeah, we kind of hit the nail on the head there with a lot of the stuff. Sure.
All right, we got, as we've heard a couple of times, RBC, Heritage, Hilton Head. Still weird that we have a one of these signature events the week following a major, but whatever. Rory McIlroy is not going to live, like all the rumors. If you saw those the last couple of days, $850 million. He emphatically came out and said, no, not true. Complete lie.
Playing the PGA Tour for life.
For life. We like Chris DeMarco on the Champions Tour, yeah, asking for more money. So let's get to our picks. I don't have on my other computer. I don't have the standings, but McLean won. I came in second. Jay came in third. So McLean's still a top. Yeah. So McLean, you won. You can go down the power rankings first.
Perfect. I have from the top Matt Fitzpatrick, 9,600. Kim Young, 8,700. Corey Connors, 8,300. I have Russell Henley at 8,100. Brian Harman at 7,800. And Tom Kim at 7,400. Big value pick there with Tom Kim at 7,400. This golf course absolutely fit him to a T.
And Harman at 7,800.
Harman had a bad round at Augusta the last round, but regardless. He had a
bad nine holes. Yeah.
He had a bad nine holes. That's exactly right. That's why he's on my team. He knows that place very well. Grew up right down the road. I think he'll play well. This is the 20th anniversary of his PGA Tour debut.
All right. Well, I'm going to go second since McLean and I's team, we have half the same people. I'll start at my bottom first. I think a great steal at $6,400 is Adam Svensson. Just love that, $6,400. Then I'm going to go up to, I have Tom Kim as well, $7,400. Round of the day on Sunday at Augusta. You know, he's not too long, so a short golf course, but he's a good iron player, a good putter. So I think this venue fits him well. Great value at $7,400. Taylor Moore has been playing some very solid golf this year. I got him at $7,400. Another value pick. I'm going to go Russell Henley. I picked him last week, made the cut, but then didn't really do a whole lot. I'm going to stick with him. I think there's another great venue at $8,100. Then I'm going to go up to Matt Fitzpatrick. He started to show some signs of life here. The last few events, he loves this place. It's nostalgic for him. He is the defending champion. And then my top guy, who I think he gets it done this week, I'm riding with him again. Picked him last week, $10,800, Xander Schauffele.
Nice.
Jay, judging by the face, I think I picked a couple of the same guys as you.
Yeah, I was trying to decide if I wanted to change a couple of picks, but, yeah, that, I feel like that's the benefit of going last and being in last place. You can deviate, but yeah, I mean, every one of the players that I have has been already mentioned except for one player. So, or I should say, I take that back, two players. I'll just roll through at the bottom. Taylor Moore, Mikey, you just mentioned him. He's playing great, 10 of 10 cuts. 7,400 again, Cam Davis, who has been playing some good golf and has got a decent track record here. Then I jump up to Mr. Corey Connors, $8,300 for all the reasons that you guys have mentioned. I don't know, Mike, you didn't have Corey McLean. You had Corey Connors.
Yeah, McLean had him.
And then I go up the only player on my board here outside of Cam Davis that is not on your lineups is Mr. Sugar Shane Lowry, $8,500. I feel like this course just is like right up his alley, and he's had some decent finishes here in the past. Then Cam Young, $8,700, and then to round it out, my highest price guy, which we all have, Mr. Matthew Fitzpatrick, which is a big want, want, want.
Yeah.
All right. I tried to take Fitzpatrick out of there, but I couldn't figure it out fast enough.
I do like this golf tournament. It's a fun venue. It's different. I love that it's the signature event now because you're going to get a good leaderboard and good field. And is usually always, even when it was not a signature event and the fields weren't that good, I always felt like it came down to 18.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there always seems to be a good finish at this golf course. So
it's a great golf course, you know, and we didn't really get into, we don't want to talk about
good. Let's end the show here.
Let's before we do that, Mike, I don't want to do the fans a disservice. You know, we got to get this ball rolled back. We absolutely have to. We watched the Masters and there were only 8 players that finished under par. And that's just too damn many. It's just too damn many. These guys need to shoot over par. Like, it's absolutely atrocious. And, you know, the funny thing also, if you notice, the rough was not long. It was easy to hit out of. There wasn't rough that was penalizing anywhere at Augusta. No penalizing rough. But the course was too
easy. It played, that doesn't help your argument.
It just played too easy. No, it does, because the course just played too easy. You know, if we have long rough, you know, it would have made the golf course way too tough and the golf ball's going way too far. We got to make some change here. This is a mistake. This is an absolute mistake.
I'm not getting into an argument, but to use Augusta, the golf course that lengthens the golf course every year, probably not a good example for you. The golf course that has no rough, probably not a good example for your argument. Also, please show me where the USGA has ever commented on scores being too difficult. They're trying to eliminate a certain player. They don't. You're making up these false arguments that the USGA doesn't make.
I'm not making up a false argument. I'm just saying.
Yes, you are.
Mike, I'm here with you, buddy. I'm here with you. The golf course is way too tough. It needs to be – we need to have a shorter golf ball. We had way too many players finish under par. I'm with you, buddy.
That's not what the argument is, though. That's not what the argument is.
It's not what the USGA's argument is.
No, it's not. Yeah, they have never mentioned scoring. They have never mentioned scoring. You're making up arguments. You're making up their side of the fight.
I'm not making up an argument. I'm looking at the generalized part of this argument. Look, we've got it.
You don't even know what the USGA's stance is anymore. You've made up all these straw man arguments in your head.
No, for some reason you're fucking consumed
with the rollback.
Guys are hitting it way too far. They're just hitting it way too far. I mean, Augusta, I don't want to see anyone finish under par.
Because they lengthen the goddamn golf course every year.
And I don't, you know what?
You should really not use Augusta for your defense of this, because they are the exact reason why we need a rollback.
No, I don't feel like that's accurate. You're the one that wants rough. No, I agree. I do want rough. I think it'd be easy to grow that rough up a little bit, and no one shoot under par. I mean, why are people shooting under par? That's not fun. Let's go ahead and roll that golf ball back, grow that rough up.
That's not their argument. That they have never talked about scoring. You're making up arguments, dude. Like, if you want to argue this, fucking know what the other side is saying.
Golf course is too long. Golf ball goes way too far. Just goes way too far. This golf course is
too
easy. It's too easy.
I'm done.
It's too easy. It's too easy.
That's not what they're arguing.
More people shooting over par.
Before we keep going, I need to get some popcorn because I want to just sit back.
No, don't get any popcorn.
The golf course is not near hard enough.
It's not what they're saying.
I don't want to see anyone finishing under par. It's terrible.
That's not what they're saying. Terrible. McLean, you dumbass. Fucking read it's what they actually terrible. Say. Educate yourself. It's not what they're saying.
Finishing under par is bad for the game.
That's not what they're saying. You don't even know what the argument is. You've just let this fester in your head and you've manufactured it. Like,
I don't like seeing
you've manufactured players. This.
I don't want to see pros make birdies. I don't want to see pros make birdies. It's not fun.
Okay, go find the straw man in your closet there that you're arguing with, because that's not what the USGA has said.
Roll it back.
At the golf course that has lengthened every fucking year for 25 years.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's perfect.
Why do you think they're lengthening it, McLean? Why do you think they're lengthening it?
Perfect. It's perfect. Roll it
Augusta
back.
National. Augusta National bought another hole on another golf course and paid them millions of dollars to reroute their entire golf course so they could lengthen a hole because their guys are hitting it too far. And that's the golf course you're trying to use as your argument and your defense. You might want to get a new lawyer saying, there to figure out your defense on that one.
Let's see what happens this week at the Heritage. See what happens this week. You know, I mean, all the long players will be totally taken out of it. There will be rough and trees the way golf was intended to be played. And the longer player is
wait a minute. You can be rough accurate. And trees the way golf was supposed to be intended. You've been to Scotland, right? There's a bunch of rough and trees there. That's the way golf was intended to be played.
There's a bunch of rough.
There's not a fucking tree in any of those golf courses.
There's a bunch of rough. And hold on the backside of that, the only place that there isn't trees in Scotland is next to the coast playing a Lynx golf course. Most golf courses in Scotland have a bunch of fucking trees. I have been there and I have played golf over there. So don't come at me with that bullshit.
Why don't you read the actual USGA's announcement? I don't think you have read a single word of it other than you just heard rollback and now you're making up all these fake arguments in your head of what they're actually saying. Yes, you are. Okay. All right. Anything else for tonight?
I want to look in Scotland.
What? You broke up. What'd you say?
I want to look at the amount of trees in Scotland.
Okay. Go count them. Let me know when you get back to me after you count them all.
How many trees are in Scotland? We need to do some research.
I'm serious. I'm tired of all these pros making birdies. This is bullshit. Roll that shit back.
That's not the argument. I don't know how many times I have to say it. You just don't want to believe it anymore.
It's
you have
the these effect. Fake facts in your head. It's the effect.
No, it's less not. Birdies. No, it's not.
The golf course so easy. Plain.
No, it's not.
The golf course had no rough, and they still shot fucking eight guys shot under par.
You're contradicting your own argument. I don't know if you understand that.
I don't think I am, Mike.
Okay.
Well, on that note.
All right. Cheers.